It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, editor-at-large at Search ERP, with my colleague Brian McKenna, business applications editor at Computer Weekly. Hi, Brian.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Today, we'll give our take on SAP Sapphire Now Reimagined, the virtual online conference that replaced the annual gathering in Orlando that was canceled because of COVID-19. Then we'll step back for a big picture assessment of SAP's competitive position in the application market and what its current product and technology strategy might mean for customers. Our guest today is fellow Tech Target editor Jim O'Donnell, who's the news editor of Search SAP and Search ERP. Thanks for coming in, Jim. So Jim, you and Brian and I have been attending these Sapphires together in Orlando for, I think it was about 5 or 6 years, maybe longer.
We missed it this year.
Yeah, we sure did. Our experience is a lot different. The most important thing is we did not have our usual arrival night dinner at the Hilton Orlando.
Yep.
At the wonderfully named David's Club Bar and Grill. So I missed that very much. But seriously, Jim, SAP, it looked like they made kind of a Herculean effort to convert a large number of the sessions that they were going to have in Orlando to online format. But then only to have the whole thing blow up at the start in just about the most embarrassing way.
Well, yeah, Dave, it was quite, I think, embarrassing for SAP that they were pitching this virtual reimagined conference where everyone was going to click on a login and they would get start off with, actually the process had started for a few weeks before. They'd been putting up some of their content up on some of their servers before. But when people tried to log in to Christian Klein's keynote, which of course was his sort of big coming up party, nobody could get on. This was, and they made kind of a big deal that it was going to be time specific to people around the world. So whenever you were, it was at 10:15 on Monday morning, wherever your time zone was, I think. But nobody could get on. So there was this mad scramble to access the video of Christian Klein giving his keynote. And nobody could figure it out. And eventually it was made available on Twitter, on Periscope Twitter. So, so as I talked to a few people after it, everybody had problems. Everybody thought it was, quite embarrassing. One person that I talked to said it doesn't matter how good the content might have been afterwards. That's like the thing that people were most going to talk about, the mm-hmm. Sapphire Now Reimagined conference, and particularly because giving a little bit of wind to some of SAP's competitors who have been always critical of them as a cloud company, that saying if they can't even sort of host this this event on whatever cloud system, and I don't think anyone really knew what they were hosting it on. I couldn't find out.
I'll confess I haven't dug into that too deeply yet either. You would think that there's probably some combination of an outside provider, maybe with also SAP systems. So I don't know that it's entirely their fault in terms of their technology.
Yeah.
Certainly they're responsible.
It's hard to say. And we heard Christian Klein the next day sort of really apologizing for it and saying that, that they were really, kind of chagrined about it, but it happened and there's not much they can do about it at this point.
He was obviously pretty angry about it the night before, but seemed to have calmed down quite a lot. And, today's another day, he said, quite philosophical about it. He said something about he'd outsourced it to a third-party provider, and that was a mistake that he had to take responsibility for. It was pretty embarrassing. I got to the Periscope feed thanks to Ray Wang. I think he was the one who effectively directed me to that. Not personally.
It worked swimmingly. Thanks. The videos were doing really well over there.
But it does sort of point out that, you know, there are, you know, these virtual conferences that everyone, you know, are running now. There's nothing sort of, you know, perfect about any of them, I don't think. And everyone's trying to figure out how to, you know, deal with this content that they're presenting, how to deal with interactivity. Of course, there was no interactivity with Christian Clients Keynote. It was just a recorded video. So you could watch it at any time. It didn't really matter to me why it had to be at a specific time, but why they couldn't have got that, you know, just up on their site without those problems is sort of, you know, I think.
And it had very high production values, didn't it? The kind of the graphics and and so on.
Well, that's true. And you know, I said, having said that there were problems with the, you know, the connection, I would say the reviews, so to speak, quote unquote reviews of Christian Klein's performance and the production was pretty good from most people I talked to. They thought that he had a good message. They thought that, you know, I think I heard it, you know, especially in sort of the COVID times, you know, someone I had spoken to said that they thought, you know, Bill McDermott was very, very slick and very showman-y, of course. We all know that. And they thought that had it been Bill McDermott, it would have probably set a, you know, kind of not really the right tone for this times. And as Christian Klein sort of coming out as the CEO, the new CEO, you know, it really kind of contrasted with that showmanship. But he also showed that he did have his message was pretty on point, and he had some good examples. He had, you know, his message was really about the need for agility and sort of the importance of, you know, sustainability. I think that those were good messages. They were pretty well received from the people I talked to. And he did sort of explain the intelligent enterprise in a way that made more sense to me and to a few other observers than you know, they've tried in the past to sort of explain it. And I don't know if they've done a great job about it, but I think his example of the auto industry, you know, and the kind of the changes that they have to go through, the sort of the change in customer demand, the rapid, drastic drop off of sales, the interruption of the supply chains, kind of that need to have the intelligent enterprise as something that could help the auto industry through that transition, I think was a good message. It was a good example. And then he showed, he brought on Porsche as an example of you know, an auto company that, you know, is implemented an intelligent enterprise, and he kind of showed this this mobile application or this end-to-end car buying application. Now, having said that, literally everyone I talked to said that the example of Porsche was very tone-deaf, that nobody is out there buying $100,000 Porsches these days. However, the actual process, if you could sort of translate that to other car manufacturers or any other manufacturer, that you're sort of bringing in all these sort of elements of supply chain and customer experience and digital twins for your manufacturing process to have a really end-to-end sort of coalesced effort of these cloud-based systems that can, have a much more resilient, as they're saying, and agile business framework. That seemed to me to be a pretty good explanation of what the intelligent enterprise is as they're defining it.
So. That's very interesting what you say there, Jim. What the intelligent enterprise being kind of tied to a specific industry, there does seem to be this emphasis at Sapphire this year on industry cloud. So maybe that's just the way they're managing to kind of put that over to customers is to ground it in a kind of very verticalized industry approach. Whereas in previous years we've had Leonardo a few years back, kind of encapsulating all the kind of cutting edge stuff that SAP does, and that's part of the intelligent enterprise. But I think people really struggled to get their heads around whatever that was. So maybe this adopting this much more industry specific approach is a better way forward for that. I was a bit uncomfortable with his own personal kind of illustration of, you know, buying the high end sports car and so on. I mean, it was very, to me, it seemed very 1% when your average SAP manager in a company is not going to be driving a, they might get a Toyota Prius or something.
I do have a 5-year-old plug-in hybrid that I do. I'm probably going to need four new tires when I have my inspection next month. So we'll see if there's an app for that. Brian, every year we go to Orlando and you are slaving away in the press area of the Orange County Convention Center. Obviously, as we've said, this year was a lot different because the Christian Klein keynote was canned. But I thought your piece did a good job, as did Jim's, of capturing the themes and the messages. Anything else you want to say about Christian Klein's keynote and what it says about
it? Oh, thanks very much. I mean, it was a bit of a struggle. I mean, I think once I got cottoned on to the, you know, sustainability and resilience, as it was a very big topic and a very pertinent topic to the COVID-19 pandemic crisis, with all the disruptions to supply chains that there have been. I seem to remember him saying something about he was discussing supply chains more than he ever had in his life before, or something to that
effect.
He said
that during the Q&A yesterday, the Tuesday Q&A.
Okay, well, I thought that had real pertinence, and I quite liked the way that the climate change theme kind of stuck with that, even though, you know, COVID is clearly the front and center big material priority for all of us at the moment, but looking to the future. And one of the things that they have come up with, I've not really dug into it in detail this time round, partly because I'm not there. You know, I mean, normally you're held hostage at Sapphire for 3 or 4 days and you don't have anything else to focus on other than SAP's world. But I've just been dipping in and out, really, to be honest. But they do have this Climate 21 program, which is something that they've made a bet of. And the first thing from that is an application that uses data from S4HANA and is operated and executed within the SAP Analytics Cloud. Joe Miller from the FT wrote a little piece about it, this Climate 21 program, which effectively measures the carbon cost of your supply chain. Again, coming back to the supply chain theme, and the German company that Joe Miller cited, probably directed by SAP, was a German company called Dula, who seemed to have something to do with gummy bears, but they're using the application. And Thomas Saurisig seems to be the executive who's attached to that Climate 21 stuff. But it's not, I mean, last year, if you said, well, what's the big technology theme this year, it would have been Qualtrics and X and O. The year before, it would have been S4HANA. The year before that, I think Leonardo. And then before that, S4HANA and HANA. You know, we don't have that kind of technology aspect to really grasp, I think, this time.
Yeah, I felt that this was the most product light on products, but big picture sort of thematic conference, certainly a Sapphire that I've been to in 8 or 9 years. And it is an impressive vision. It does seem, one thing is that struck me is that they are relying on partners a lot, and they're being very explicit about that in their industry cloud effort, and I think Climate 21. They talked about how they'll be working with their partners. Industry 4.0, or as they call it, Industry 4.now, again, also investing, I guess, it sounded like, in partners. Thomas Saurisig referred to those investments, but there weren't any specifics. it seemed as if the SAP product carbon footprint analytics application, which really rolls off your tongue, that might have been the only real product so far announced. I think it is announced at the show or very recently was released. And so I do, to SAP's credit, it is an impressive vision, and a number of the other ERP vendors seem to have taken this approach the last few years. I've noticed it at Infor and then to some degree at Oracle, where they, maybe because of the cloud release cycle, the quarterly release cycle with software as a service, it could be a reason for this. They seem to use the conferences now more to push their message and not as the big coming out party for product after product after product. But certainly for previous Sapphires, this was the lightest on real introductions, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, there was really nothing. I mean, you know, their announcement of Industry Cloud, I was getting a headache trying to figure out what exactly it is. I'm still not exactly sure what it is. Yeah. But having said that, I think that the Climate 21 is the thing that's really the most tangible sort of announcement, quote unquote, that they made. And, you know, I think that there is, it's something that, you know, people have been looking for. People have been sort of, from an enterprise point of view, I don't see that there's any other initiatives like this out there. So it might give them sort of, at least a feather in their cap that they are, you know, becoming a much more sustainably focused company and kind of giving. But it's really giving, as Brian, you were saying, that tool that I can't even remember the name that we just mentioned. But in typical sort of SAP fashion, they've come up with this convoluted, too long name for it. But you know, I think that it can be valuable for companies to figure out what the actual economic or global or carbon sort of footprint of the products that they make and the parts that go into them. So, you know, if they can sort of, use that to make more sustainable products, I think that's a pretty good way to go.
Mm-hmm. I talked to Holger Mueller, who I know you spoke to also, Jim, for your piece, the analyst, longtime analyst at Constellation Research, former mm-hmm. employee of both SAP and Oracle. I asked him about the industry clouds, and he said, had an interesting take. He thought that it was, it could be part of a almost genius strategy to bring more customers to, as he said, real cloud, which I take to mean software as a service. Apparently these offerings, to his knowledge, are going to be largely done in the cloud, and so that this could be a way to entice those customers in those particular industries to finally make the move off premises for the most part. So we shall see if that really happens.
Is it reminiscent, David, for you of Infor's approach, which is highly verticalized?
And they fully agree. Yes, it is. Yes. They've been bragging about that for years. And I think the same. They've done the same sort of thing with their cloud platform, which is not as complete, certainly, as Oracle's, and maybe not even as much as SAP's. But they've tried to. I think it's called Cloud Suite, as I recall. They've tried to tie it to their industry verticals, which is really their legacy with all their legacy platforms from different companies that they've acquired. I think they have Bond, Lawson, and other companies like that. So anyway, this
one example of that vertical approach, though, is they announced a partnership with Honeywell, with the Honeywell Forge, which takes a lot of IoT sort of related data from different sources, and they're combining that with their SAP Cloud for Real Estate, which is a very sort of verticalized application of cloud data. So, real estate managers, owners can get a whole bunch of information about, how buildings are operating, sort of what the climate conditions are within the buildings, and using sort of the real-time information from S/4HANA and from cloud, they can make decisions, based on how much, how many people are in a building. Should we, turn up the heat or the lighting or basically control the operations of real estate properties in more real time. So yeah, that's an example of that kind of verticality that I think we'll see more of coming out of those partnerships.
Wasn't that another offering that seemed like it was still to come, though? It was sort of a partnership announcement, but that the specifics are...
No, I think the specific real estate part of it is available.
Okay.
And that, and as far as I know, that is a SaaS solution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there will be more coming from what they say.
This might under the industry cloud heading in the press release that they did for the second day, they do mention artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, and other advanced technologies from SAP and so on. A few years back, that would probably all have been branded Leonardo, I guess. But it's folded into this, under this industry cloud category. I mean, maybe it's a more down-to-earth way of doing the sort of things they were talking about, a few years back, where Leonardo was kind of a catalyst for doing digital transformation. And just going back to what you were saying, Jim, about the using the automotive industry as a way of understanding and communicating the intelligent enterprise.
A lot of moving parts still to be coordinated. And Christian Klein talked about the major integration effort that he has committed himself to making, the company making. He said that, I think, in his first few days as co-CEO and then especially as sole CEO. It's something that used to be the strength of SAP going back years with the original ERP system, the one integrated and so-called end-to-end system, but they've kind of moved away from that. So you almost get a sense that they're trying to put together that integrated system again, with these disparate parts, some of which were not even developed by SAP, like Ariba and Concur and many of the cloud properties. So the Sapphire Now Reimagined, it happened in really strange times for ERP vendors, to say the least, during the pandemic, as they're seeing a sharp drop in their license revenue from customers. So, that has created some concerns, and I think it's delayed some things that the ERP vendors might have done in a normal year. Brian, Oracle was the last of the major ERP vendors to report its quarterly earnings, which it did yesterday afternoon. I thought the results were similar broadly to what SAP, Microsoft, and I think Workday have said, which is that the results were decent for the past full year. There was a hit in the past quarter, and they are lowering their expectations for the next quarter or two and not willing to do full year guidance, as they say, or prediction about their full year revenue because there's so much uncertainty. So Brian, you did, you always do a piece on that, and I know you've already posted your piece about the Oracle.
I wrote the quarterly and full year numbers up pretty quickly this morning. It's really no more than the basics. Revenue's down, and the quarter revenue is down 6%. Mm-hmm. Full year revenue down 1%. I mean, if you compare that with SAP, their last quarter revenue was up 7%. Now, in terms of Oracle, you're talking $10.4 billion for the quarter in terms of SAP, $6.5 billion for the quarter. So I did a quick calculation, highly sophisticated, before coming on the podcast.
You are known for your math expertise.
So, that's 62% of Oracle's revenue. So, let's not get ourselves on here. Oracle is still a financially bigger base than SAP is, although they're both big beasts. But SAP, although it was affected by the pandemic, as you would expect in that first quarter, seems to have been affected less than Oracle. I don't know whether that's got something to do with SAP being a German company, and I'm speculating here wildly. And Germany's handled the COVID-19 pandemic pretty well in comparison with the UK. And sorry to say, guys, the US. So just maybe they have been, to use that word, more resilient for that reason. I don't know, but they don't seem to be doing too badly in terms of the pandemic and its impact. But I mean, nobody knows, do they? I mean, Christian Klein himself said at the earnings call a few weeks ago, was it, that he doesn't have a crystal ball, so he doesn't know what's going to happen either. But they don't seem to have been too badly affected by COVID. In fact, in the FT piece that I referred to earlier, Joe Miller said that. He said they haven't really.
I listened to the Oracle earnings call. It's something I don't normally do, but I did this time. And Safra Catz
was Larry being was he being at all boastful? Would you
say? Yes, he was. I would say I felt like I was at Oracle Open World. There was a lot of talk about the customer wins, which I guess is something good news you want to present to Wall Street.
Zoom. They had a big customer win with Zoom.
Yes, and that's been publicized. And he talked about the amazing capacity increase that Zoom needed and that Oracle was able to provide with their Oracle Cloud Infrastructure platform.
Although Zoom is still working with AWS and Microsoft Azure, so...
Also, so they're spreading the wealth around the different, One thing that I noticed in the Safra Catz statements during the earnings call was that they seem pretty confident. She said they're confident that the delay in getting the revenue from customers, that would sort itself out essentially. She said that, we expect that these payments will be collected in full over the course of the fiscal year, so that they're at the beginning of the fiscal year now. So they admitted that in the fourth quarter, their fourth quarter, which ended recently, I think at the end of April, they saw delays in customer payments due to the pandemic and also a drop off in deals. But they were talking as if it's really just a delay in what people owe, not a permanent break. So I don't know how much of a break customers from any of these vendors should be expecting. Maybe a little bit of a grace period while they get themselves back in business.
Well, Dave, I'd heard we'd had teased out for a while now, I think Larry Ellison of Oracle, saying that there were going to be some big customer wins from SAP. Now, I think that I heard in the call that they were, they announced that Kroger, I think, and Patronus, two companies, had replaced HCM systems that were SAP. Now, I think he said they replaced SAP systems with Oracle Fusion HCM, which doesn't seem like it's, to me, the big sort of thing that he was hinting at. What can you tell me about that?
During the earnings call, Larry Ellison did say it was an HCM win. So they replaced, as you said, they replaced their SAP human capital management with what Oracle calls Fusion HCM, or it's the Oracle Cloud HCM or HCM Cloud product. And he did say more generally about the market that they are seeing that their Fusion HCM growth rate is expanding, and that they are finding a lot of business where people bundle, they choose the HCM offering when they're doing a full Oracle ERP cloud, and that this could make them soon the largest cloud HCM vendor. At least that's their aspiration. The thing that really jumped out at me during that call was, again, Larry Ellison and to some degree also Safra Catz, again, taking a dig at SAP for their, what they say is the lack of true cloud products, not real software as a service. I think there's a large grain of truth in that, and yet it overstates the case. It's not as if there's no software as a service offering. There are parts of S/4HANA that are available that way. I think Business by Design is also, can be a SaaS product. But they continue to present this picture, Oracle does, of them being the company that has the most complete software as a service or true cloud suite. And I actually heard this confirmed again by our friend Holger Mueller at Constellation Research, who said that he thought that Oracle is about 3 to 4 years ahead in terms of product completeness and maturity for cloud. So SAP does have its work cut out for it, for sure.
Although it does have a, it does really have a different strategy. I sometimes wonder if we are just, you know, comparing two different things, because what SAP has done is acquired a whole bunch of cloud properties, SuccessFactors, Ariba, Concur, Fieldglass. And they've got that, you know, from an SAP customer point of view, that kind of becomes a problem because it's so incoherent and they've got different account managers for different technologies and so on. But that is, has been SAP's approach, is to acquire those and at the same time, almost in parallel, to build up the S/4HANA ERP system, you know, based on HANA. It's almost like a kind of dual power situation that they have within what they're offering to customers. Whereas, you know, Oracle has taken a much more of a piece approach, because they made that kind of software as a service approach in a pure kind of forum. And also Oracle has the platform as a service and the infrastructure as a service stack, as opposed to SAP with its, you know, building on AWS, Alibaba, the hyperscalers, right? And they just are two different. They just are two different approaches.
Yeah, no, I think another interesting way to think of it too is that SAP is sort of, they mentioned sort of building this network of networks, of all the networks that they have out there, the Ariba network, the business logistics network. They're sort of, I think, trying to allow companies to, you know, all sort of meet on these networks, and all these transactions will sort of flow together in one big system. So, that's another interesting way that they're approaching it, which is probably different from what Oracle does, which doesn't have those networks as far as I know.
Yeah. And of course, the context here is the extension of support for ECC6. But Oracle had seen an opportunity to take business away from SAP because of that, because of SAP customers having to choose between, you know, moving to S/4HANA or going for something else. So there was an opportunity for Oracle to take some of those defecting customers. But the extension of support for ECC6 kind of think probably took the wind out of the sails a little bit there.
Well, this might be a good place to end it. That does it. Thanks for listening, and thank you, Brian, and thank you, Jim.